Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Tehillim podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for more information on our fully interactive online yeshiva. For the past few weeks, for this podcast, we've been looking at the Mizmorei Tehillim that we say during Kabbalat Shabbat. We started with Mizmor Tzadi Hei. We worked our way through Tzadi Vav and Tzadi Zayin. And today we're up to Tzadi Chet. Now, as we will note, to some degree, during the podcast today, Mizmor Tzadi Chet repeats many of the themes that we've seen in the previous Mizmorim. The idea of Hashem being creator of the world, that we have to sing out to Him, that He is that who does acts of greatness for Am Yisrael, that the world needs to recognize this, etc., etc. These are themes that repeat throughout all of these Mizmorim. Particularly, Mizmor Tzadi Chet is similar to Mizmor Tzadi Vav. And a quick look at the two Mizmorim side by side, perhaps many of you have noticed this during Kabbalat Shabbat, there are many parallels between them. Both of them start Shiru LaHashem Shir Chadash. They end with a very similar pasuk. And the middle, while not being identical, right, one Mizmor emphasizes one thing, another Mizmor emphasizes something else, but there are similarities between them. What I'd like to do today, since we've already looked at a few Mizmorim that have similar themes, is to really concentrate on one little point. And so that, in effect, today's podcast is really going to be a lesson in metaphor appreciation. Because I would like to look at one little metaphor that is found inside this Mizmor, and to really try to understand it. Because sometimes a metaphor, you know, is fairly simple. And every once in a while, you find a metaphor that, if you scratch its surface, is a real gem, right? It really, there's more to it than initially meets the eye, at least perhaps to those of us reading it who don't have extensive knowledge of all cognate languages, for example, of Biblical Hebrew. In appreciation of metaphors, perhaps also in an appreciation of nature and the degree to which the Mishorer of this Mizmor understood nature, appreciated nature, and was able to use this appreciation in the Mizmor itself. The general type of metaphor that I'd like to glance at today are the metaphors in Sefer Tehillim, which use nature, different things that are found in nature, to describe a reaction to Hashem or to something which Hashem has done. Now, we've already seen similar types of things, right? Metaphors of this sort in Mizmorim that we've looked at together. So, for example, in Mizmor Tzadi Zayin, which we previously looked at, it talks about the presence of Hashem, right? Harim kidonag namasu, that the mountains before the presence of Hashem melt like wax. It also says vatachel haaretz, that the land shakes, it quivers, right? The earth shakes and quivers. And we spoke, when we looked at that mizmor, how that here you have an example of a metaphor where the things in the world, right? In this case, the earth itself and the mountains are doing things which are supposed to imply what the human beings are supposed to do, right? That they're supposed to, in this case, melt from awe or fear, or shake in fear and awe of Hashem. Another example is in the Mizmor that we're going to concentrate on today, Mizmor Tzadi Chet, Yir'am Hayam Umlo'o, right? That the sea is Yir'am. It makes a noise like thunder. It thunders, right? And there too, and in this case, it's more in the case, in the context of singing out to Hashem, right? Praising Hashem. Another example, not from the Mizmorim, from Kabbalat Shabbat, is found in one of the Mizmorim of Hallel, right? Heharim rakdu ke'elim gva'ot kivnetzon, right? Where mountains and hills are described as dancing like sheep. Another example, also in Tzadichet, the Mizmor that we're concentrating on today, as you run a new kol atzei ya'ar, right? That all of the trees of the ya'ar, of the forest, sing out in joy to God. And here you have different aspects of nature in some way reacting to Hashem. Now, what's nice about each of these metaphors is that it's not simply anthropomorphizing nature, right? It's not merely taking something we see in the world and making it act like a human being, but rather, in each of these cases, you can see how the actual thing as it exists in nature is used particularly well for this metaphor. So, for example, in Mizmor Tzadi Zayin, where we saw Harim Kedonag Namasu V'Tachel Haaretz, right? Those two examples, in the Pirush, and we talked about this when we looked at that Mizmor, many Mifrashim see what is being described as an earthquake, right? The second example, V'Tachel Haaretz, and a volcano, right? Mountains melting like wax. So the Mishorer in that case saw something that was in nature and use it to describe fear before God, right? Now, clearly, mountains don't actually fear, but it's like they're fearing, they're melting, they're shaking, right? So this is something that can be used to describe fear, and so it's as if the earth, the mountains, etc., are doing these things out of fear before Hashem. Similarly, Yiram Hayam Umlo'o from Tzadichet, right? The thundering of the ocean. Well, and if anyone spent any time on the beach, knows that when they're particularly strong, waves can thunder, right? The noise of the wave can be akin to thundering, right? And so if you're talking about something in nature calling out in praise of Hashem, so the thundering of the sea is something that actually occurs. Harim rakdu ke'elim. There too, similar to what we saw, v'tachel ha'aretz, for example. These metaphors, the dancing mountains, right? According to most mifreshim, is describing Ma'amad Har Sinai, right? So once again, the situation of Ma'amad Har Sinai, where we are told there the mountains were shaking, right? V'Har Sinai. Sorry, Vayecherad Hahar, right? The mountain shook, right? So in the metaphor of Sefer Tehillim, right, this shaking of the mountain is described as the mountain dancing. As you run a new kol atzei ya'ar, so perhaps, I don't know, perhaps the singing out of the trees is the rustling of the wind through the trees, for example. Right, so one can see how all each of these metaphors actually fits the thing in nature that is being used. And it's not merely the anthropomorphization of nature. The particular metaphor that I'd like to look at today in depth from Mizmor Tzadichet is that which is found in Pasuk Chet. Right, there are actually two metaphors found in this pasuk, and I'd like to look at the first one. The pasuk says, "Neharot yimcha'u chaf, yachad harim yiranenu." The rivers, neharot, will clap their hands. The mountains together will sing out in joy. And so, the metaphor that I'd like to look at carefully is neharot yimcha'u chaf, that the rivers will clap their hands. And I chose this metaphor for today's podcast because it's this metaphor in particular that I found, I don't know, somewhat amusing or perhaps quizzical. Because while the thundering of the waves and the shaking of the mountains, these can all very easily be attributed, as I already pointed out, to things that we see in nature. The clapping of hands of the rivers, that was a little bit harder to understand. Although I do have a tendency, I must admit, to view the world in a cartoon-like fashion, and I enjoy anthropomorphizing things in the world. Nevertheless, the idea of rivers springing hands all of a sudden and having them clap, well, I was trying to figure out what exactly that was, right? What is the clapping of the hands of the river? So certainly one possibility is that this metaphor is not meant to be something visual, right? It's not something that we see. Right, there are no hands involved in the clapping of the hands of the river, but rather similar to the Yiram Hayam, right, the thundering of the sea. This is an auditory metaphor, meaning that there's something about the river which sounds like the clapping of hands. And of course, it's not too hard to imagine that when you have a river that's rushing by, not perhaps like a placid river, but one that's like has rapid water going by, right, jumping over rocks, etc., could sound a lot like the clapping of hands, right? So that's one good possibility as to what this metaphor is about, right? The sound of the river reminded the Mishorer of the clapping of hands, and that is what is being evoked here. And, you know, that works, right? That could be a sufficient explanation of what this metaphor is trying to say. In this particular instance, however, there's a midrash which I believe can give a deeper understanding of this metaphor, meaning a deeper understanding of what the Mishorer was thinking when he talked about Neharot Yimcha Ukaf. And this midrash is found in Midrash Tehillim on this Mizmor, on Mizmor Tzadichet, where it says, Neharot Yimcha Ukaf, Bisimchatan Shel Yisrael. Right? No, so this is explaining the Mizmor, that the rivers are clapping their hands out of joy for what is happening, the good that is happening to Yisrael. Amar Rabbi Nechemia, Bishlosha Mikomot Ne'emar Dvar Zeh. This idea of the clapping of hands is mentioned, Rabbi Nechemia says, in three places. The first place, he says, is in Tehillim Mem Zayin Pasuk Bet, Kol Ha'amim Tak'u Chaf. Right? All of the nations of the world will, here it's not the word Yimcha Ukaf, but Tak'u Chaf, right? They will, essentially the idea is the same, clap their hands. Rabbi Nechemia says, Kaf El Kaf B'Simchatan Shel Yisrael, Vehu Kaf Mamash. Right? That they're clapping their hands, they're putting their hands together to applaud, because of the joy of Yisrael. And here, Rabbi Nechemia points out, we're talking about kaf mamash, like a real palm, right? Kaf meaning palm, hands. We're talking about real hands, hands of human beings. That, of course, being of the amim, of the nations of the world. The second example, Rabbi Nechemia says, v'chol atzei hasadeh yimchau kaf. Right, this is a pasuk from Yishayahu, Perek Nunhei Pasuk Yudbet, where it says here that the trees of the field are clapping hands. And here the phrase is the same as in our Mizmor, Yimcha'u Chaf. And Rabbi Nechemia explains, Shehayu makim anaf al anaf. Right? What is the image here that Yeshayahu is evoking? Of the branches of trees knocking against each other, presumably in the wind. En kaf ela anaf shene'emar pri etz hadar kapot tmarim. Right, and the proof of this, that here, yimcha ukaf, the kaf of the trees, are the branches of the trees, is because, as we well know from the Arba Minim from Sukkot, right, the branches of the tamar, which is used for the lulav, is referred to as kapot tmarim. And this works in English as well, right? The kapot tmarim is the type of tree, is a palm tree, right? And both in English and in Hebrew, it's called such because of its similarity when open to a palm, right, to a hand. The third example, Rabbi Nechemia says, and here we get to our Mizmor. Al kef nahara. Al kefin dib nahara. Oh, sorry. Whoops, I skipped by accident the key pasuk, the quote from our Mizmor. Naharot yimcha ukaf. Right, this is the third example, that the rivers will clap their hands. Al kef nahara, al kafin dibin nahara, mechayan bechedva. Right, what is the third example from our Mizmor, that the rivers are clapping their hands? Al kef nahara, right, so the kaf that is being spoken about here is, Rabbi Nechemia says, kef nahara, and then it's translated into Aramaic, kefin dibin nahara. And here too, the clapping of the hands is out of joy, chedva, lima, right? Because of what? Lifnei Hashem kibalish bota aretz. Right? That's the end of the end of the Mizmor. Right? That all of this joy of the various parts of nature is because Hashem is coming to judge the world. But of course, what's curious here is what kaf are we talking about, right? Kapotz marim from an eitz, we know what that is, right? Branches of a tree being referred to as a kaf. That we're familiar with. But what is the kefin de binahara? So if one actually looks up the word kef, kefa, in an Aramaic dictionary, lo and behold, there are two possible meanings as to what exactly a kefin de binahara might be. One possibility is that kefin in this context means waves. There are a number of examples in the Gemara where this word is used. For example, chagiga daf yutel amud aleph, sota lamed dalet amud aleph. There are other examples, right? In each of these cases, it talks about a wave. For example, it mentions that when using the water, a body of water, as a mikveh to immerse something to make it pure, you can immerse it in certain parts of a wave in the water, but not other parts. And the part that you cannot immerse in it is the kef, right? Which is the part of the wave where it's arched over, right? We're familiar with waves. Picture a wave in your mind, right? Where it's arched over, because the claim in the Gemara is that that's not really water. That's really empty space, right? And it's true. In the middle of a wave, as it kind of like flops over, there is empty space. And like, so I guess the fear is there that you're not really immersing something, that there's a lot of empty space in there. So it's possible that what's being spoken about here is some sort of wave in the river. Now, and that's the kaf that is being played with in the Midrash. One possible problem with this is that rivers don't really have waves, right? It's not like a sea where there are waves, or an ocean. Rivers don't really have waves, although it is possible that you're talking about, the rapids. As we mentioned earlier, that the sound of the water sounds like clapping hands when it's rapid. So it could be that they're also, imagine when you're in a river near where there are rapids, right, and there are a lot of rocks and the water splashing around. So there is wave-like activity or little waterfalls which behave sort of like waves. And it could be that that's what is being referred to here. You have something similar in reference to a river in Mizmor Tzadi Bet. One moment. Sorry, not Tzadi Bet, Tzadi Gimel, right? Where it says, Nasu Neharot Hashem, Nasu Neharot Kolam, Yisu Neharot Dochyam. Right? The rivers raise their voices, again a metaphor in the context of river. Yisu Neharot Dochyam. Dochyam being are sort of like breaker waves, right? Which we're usually familiar with in the sea, but here it's being referred to in terms of a Nahar. So it's possible that that is what is being referred to is either a river where there's rapidly running water, which has some sort of wave activity going on, or sometimes when you have rivers rushing into a larger body of water, such as an ocean, and the two kind of blend together, you also have a lot of turbulent activity in the water, and perhaps that's what's being referred to here. Now, it's probably significant to note that it seems that this word kipa, if it means this overturning wave, that it's quite possibly related to the word kaf, right? Because what is the meaning of kaf? It seems that the shoresh of kaf comes from the idea of something being curved, right? Because the palm of our hand, particularly when we often use it like to hold something, let's say, imagine scooping up some water, is curved. So too, right, this wave is called kif or kifa because it is curved. Right, and there are many other examples of words that are etymologically related from this same shoresh. Right, so that's an interesting point, that this play on words that's going on in this midrash, connecting these three cases of yimcha ukaf, that they are all possibly etymologically connected as well. Another possible meaning of the word kif, kef, kefa, which also is connected to a nahar, to a river, is the meaning bank, right? As in the bank of a river. This meaning also seems to be etymologically connected to the word kaf, probably because the bank of a river, either because it curves, right? Very often riverbeds are windy, or because the riverbed, right, that which in which the river sits, is kind of curved, right? The bottom of it is somewhat curved. So it's so interestingly, this possibility is also etymologically connected in terms of the wordplay that might be going on in the Midrash. This word can be seen in many of the Aramaic translations to the word Sfat Hayam that one sees in the Targumim, right? So for example, in Shmot Perek Yudalad Pasuk Lamed, right, in the middle of the story of Kriyat Yam Suf, it says, Vayosha Hashem Bayomahu et Yisrael Miyad Mitzrayim, Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim Met al Sfat Hayam. Unklus, on that pasuk, right, for the words Sfat Hayam, it says Al Kef Yama, right? So Sfat, right, the bank, the side of the Yam is Kef. So it's possible that in our context, right, when the Midrash is playing with the kaf of the person and the kaf of the tree and the kaf of the nahar, that what is being referred to here is the banks of the river, and that is the word kaf that is being played with in the Midrash. Now, interestingly, there are some other sources that seem to indicate point us in the direction of this interpretation. One interesting pasuk is found in Bamidbar. Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And there, it's in the context of describing the Gvulot of Bnei Israel, right? The Gvulot of the Nachalot of Bnei Israel, where each tribe, which Shevet, would be within Eretz Israel. So, in the context of the describing the borders of the tribe of the borders, like the outer borders of the entire land, it says in Perek Lamedal Pasuk Yud Aleph, in that context it says Umacha al Ketef Yam Kineret Kedma, right? That it would macha, it would, in this case, it would kind of reach out towards or touch the ketef, right, which is like the word shoulder, meaning like the edge of Yam Kineret, right, the sea, right, which we know as the Kineret. So what's interesting here, right, here you don't have the word, you're talking about the edge of the Kinneret, right? What we would say again in English as the bank of the Kinneret, the shore, I guess, of the Kinneret. Here it's called the Ketef in Hebrew, and the word that means to reach out towards, to touch, is Macha. Now, if you look at the Aramaic translation, the Targumim on this pasuk, for example, in Targum Unklus. Right? How does he translate Ketef Yam Kineret Al Kef Yam Ganisar? Right. So the word for the edge of the sea here, the Ketef, is Kef. Right. It's the same word. The bank here of the sea, the shore of the sea. Right. So we see how shore is in this Aramaic translation again, meaning the bank of the sea. Now, what's interesting is that you have the word macha in connection with this bank. Now, here it doesn't mean the same thing. We're not talking about michiat kapayim. We're not talking about clapping. And yet, if you look at the perush of in the Perush of the Ibn Ezra, right, he says, he interprets this word umacha, right, in the context of the pasuk in Bamidbar, kasher amru kadmonenu, and here's quoting from the Targum, tavirta, right? Tavirta is like the Hebrew word shever, to break, meaning that it means that the border kind of like hit the kinneret, right, on the chof of the kinneret, migzerat yimcha ukaf, right? And so he says that the word macha here is like the word in the pasuk from our mizmor, yimcha ukaf, right? Because clapping is also like a hitting, a breaking kind of noise. Now, whether or not this is the pshat of the pasuk in Bamidbar, that matter aside, we see here that the word macha, at least according to some mefarshim, is the same word macha that we see in our mizmor yimcha ukaf, right? So it's interesting that you have the juxtaposition between the word macha and, at least in the Aramaic translation, the word kef, or in all cases the association with a the shore, the bank of a body of water, in this pasuk as well as in an our pasuk, and of course in the midrash that we looked at. Another interesting source that connects between the word kaf and the meaning and the word having to do with the shore or the bank of a body of water is a midrash in Bamidbar Rabba, Parasha Yud Gimel Siman Yud Zayin, where it's talking about the gifts of the Nisi'im, as described at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. So there, in that context, it talks about kaf achat, right? And the Midrash says, kaf achat, zo birkato shel zvulun, she bercho aviv zvulun lechof yamim yishkon, ve'en kaf elachaf. Kamaditema naharot yimcha ukaf, right? It says in the context of again of the presents, the gifts brought by the Nisi'im, the word kaf, kafachat, and this is referring in the midrash to the brachav zvulun, right? According to the midrash, it's connected to the brachav zvulun, where Yaakov blesses zvulun, right? In connection to the chof, right? Zvulun is the merchant, right? Who goes out in the boats, right? Zvulun lachof yamim yishkon, right? He lives according to the along the shoreline, right? And so the midrash is playing with chaf and the word chof, which, right, although one is with a chet and one is with a chaf, it's easy to see how those words could be played with, and the letters can be interchangeable, claiming that what is being really being referred to here is the chof, right? That's what's being alluded to in the word chaf, with a, you know, the word chaf fe sofit. Now what's interesting here, and I don't know if this is really etymologically connected, chaf and chof, but it is possible. Sometimes there are etymologically connected words where they have interchangeable letters, such as a chaf and a kaf. But what's particularly interesting is because in the context of our study of our mizmor, we've seen already that there is a meaning of the word kaf, or more accurately kef, in Aramaic, right, a cognate language, which does essentially mean chof, right? So here we have another source which very interestingly plays between the word kaf, kef, and chof, and even more interestingly, the proof text brought by the midrash is our pasuk naharot yimcha uchaf, right? So here, according to this midrash, quite clearly naharot yimcha uchaf refers to the chof, right? The shoreline, the bank of the rivers spoken about in the pasuk. Okay, so now just going back to our mizmor, right? When the mizmor says naharot yimcha uchaf, what is being spoken about here? What is the image that the mishorer is trying to evoke? So one possibility that we talked about is that we're talking about the water, the choppy water, the rapids, the wave-like flowing of the water, right? And that could be what the kef, that could be the chaf being played with here, the kef rather being played with here, or it could be the banks of the river, right? If it's the waves, then it could be, as I referred to at the very beginning of the podcast, it could be it could be associated with the noise that the waves make, which is like the clapping of hands. If it's the banks of the river, perhaps it's like the swishing, the sloshing of the water as it makes its way down, right, where it like kind of bangs against, splashes against the banks of the river. Either way, right, it seems pretty clear, right, after seeing that midrash from Rabbi Nechemiah on the midrash Tehillim on this mizmor, the play on words between the kaf, right, the actual hands, and the kapot marim, or the branches of the tree kaf, and the kef, either the banks of the river or the waves of the river, it seems pretty clear that one or the other of those interpretations is what the Mishorer had in mind when he was saying Neharot Yimcha Ochav. So now, suddenly, what seemed at the beginning to be a somewhat, you know, amusing image, right, of rivers suddenly sprouting hands to clap, suddenly one understands the image so much more, because there is a kef, there is a kaf that is associated with a river. It seems that it must be that the Mishorer knew this etymological connection in mind, and had it in his mind when he created that metaphor, and that is what is at the root of this image, Neharot Yimcha Ochav. I hope that this has given a taste for the depth and the beauty that the metaphors in Sefer Tehillim can hold. Something which you can take with you from now on whenever you encounter a metaphor in Sefer Tehillim. Shabbat Shalom u'mevorach.